on the rubble of her home. She cries out for her parents, but the voices are gone. She cannot understand. She's confused. She's alone. There is blood on her hands, but it's not her fault. Not her fight, not her war. She's too young to give up, but it's not her fault.
A warm welcome to you. This is Remember Palestine with me, Amina Taylor. And on today's program, Israeli officials are planning on building a further 1,200 new settler units in Al-Quds, Jerusalem, and the West Bank. And this despite international criticism, with Palestinians being forcibly removed from their homes and Palestinian homes being demolished to make way for new settlements. What must now be the strategy for combating what can only be described as a gross injustice? As the casualty figures continues to rise from the Israeli incursions into Gaza, is this the first stage of a new war on the already besieged enclave? We'll have more on that later on in the show. But first, Ireland is using its upcoming term as the President of the Council of Europe to ban products from West Bank settlements. For more on this, we're joined from Belfast by Dr. Jude Collins, who's a blogger and broadcaster. Welcome to the program, Dr. Collins. What are the implications of this proposed move by the Irish?
Well, I think most Irish people, in fact, I'd be fairly confident the majority of them would welcome an EU ban or even an Irish boycott of settlement goods if it would lead to furthering the Middle East peace process. But I'm a little bit worried about Eamon Gilmore, who is the leader of the Irish Labour Party and who has written a letter to the Irish Parliament Joint Committee on Foreign Affairs and Trade about this matter. On the one hand, he seems to be saying in the letter that he would be pressing during Ireland's presidency of the EU, he would be welcoming a move to the banning of such goods. But at the same time, in the same letter, he seems to be talking down his own chances, saying that it would be a mistake for Ireland to focus our energies on this aspect, that is to say, reaching agreement among EU members, because he says it'll be very difficult to get all of them to agree to it. So he seems to be galloping in two directions at once, which is a bit lamentable. There's just a couple of other quick points I would make, and that is that Mr. Gilmore is the leader of the Irish Labour Party, and it has to be said that he and his colleagues do have something of a reputation for championing causes far away from home, while at the same time remaining pretty silent on the question of Britain's continuing claim to jurisdiction in the northern part of Ireland, which is, as you probably know, the source of centuries of division between Ireland and England. So I think at two fronts, while Irish people would welcome such a move, Mr. Gilmore does not seem to me the most sturdy of champions for that.
Is it just important, Dr. Collins, that something is being done, whatever the chances?
Well, something is always better than nothing in a case such as this. And there's no doubt about it that a terrible injustice is being inflicted on the Palestinian people. And I guess an EU-wide ban would be something to send a strong message, I think, to Israel. But it does seem to me that if Eamon Gilmore is going to try to use the Irish presidency of the EU as a platform from which to press for a ban on settlement goods, he would need to be rather more wholehearted in his letter to the head of the Joint Committee on Foreign Affairs and Trade in Ireland. You either are for this, in which case you talk the thing up, or you're not completely, you don't have your heart fully in it, and you only half talk it up. And that's the impression I get from his letter. In a way, he wants to make a gesture, but one's not, I personally am not too confident that it is a gesture he's prepared to follow through with as full-heartedly as he could.
Dr. Jude Collins will be following this one very closely. Thank you very much for your contribution here, sir. And in other matters, the West Bank has seen increasing settler activity this week, with the IDF demolishing at least two Palestinian homes. Our correspondent Hannah Cassis reports from the area and files this one for us.
In the past 7 days, Israel has announced plans to build 72 housing units in the settlement of Ariel and expand the relatively small settlement of Itamar by five times its current size by constructing 534 settlement units. Within the same 7 days, Israel also announced the construction of 1,200 housing units in the settlements of Ramot and Pisgat Ze'ev surrounding Jerusalem Al-Quds.
This is part of the whole plan of colonizing and Judaizing Jerusalem. Since 1 year almost now, it's like intensified like never before, the whole colonial project in the West Bank. The Ramot is the other part of Jerusalem from the West. So it's like intensifying and continue building in Ramot. It is to create this block on the between Jerusalem and its extent to the West, and also to connect the settlements together from Jerusalem to the Green Line.
Other than the settlement building in Jerusalem, Israeli settlers have forcefully evicted a Palestinian family from their home in Al-Tur neighborhood of Al-Quds. This as Israeli forces demolished two homes in the West Bank village of Haris.
We had to come between the trees and hills to reach this area in order to stop the bulldozers from demolishing the houses. We surrounded the houses and the military machinery, and we were able to postpone the demolition for 4 hours due to our resistance. And we confronted them the whole time. But due to the excessive use of force from the soldiers, from gas canisters to stun grenades to live and rubber-coated bullets, they were able to distance us from the houses, and that's when they destroyed them.
Apparently, the demolition of two houses in the village of Haris is not enough destruction for Israeli forces, since they intend on demolishing 20 more homes in this neighborhood.
I have 9 boys and 3 girls, so naturally we need more space because the family is getting bigger. Some of my married sons and their families are living here with me in the house. My son worked very hard to build this house because ours was too small for our family, but they demolished it. Israel took all of our village land to build the surrounding settlements and bypass roads, and this small place is all we have left of the land, and they are not letting us build here.
Palestinians in the West Bank are also subjected to violence from extremist Israeli settlers who raid Palestinian villages, raise trees and crops, and violently attack the indigenous Palestinian population.
We went to our land and found settlers cutting our olive trees. We tried to stop them and fight broke out between us. There was 3 of us and 20 of them. We started throwing stones at each other and they got the best of us. I fell down and they hit me with rocks, sticks and metal pipes.
Israeli settlements are the major obstacle to the resumption of negotiations between the Palestinian Authority and Israel and are widely condemned by the international community. For Remember Palestine, Hannah Cassis, Occupied Ramallah.
Thanks there to Hannah Cassis. But now with illegal settlements, as we saw there, still springing up all over the occupied territories, the international community's lip service to their presence, well, it's had no effect. Will pressure from civil society finally achieve something political blustering has so far been unable to do? Well, the Reverend Dr. Stephen Sizer is a patron of ICAD, that's the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions, and he's also the vicar of Christ Church in Surrey, and he makes a wonderful return. Thank you so much for joining us. We saw in Hannah's piece there proposed 1,200 new settler units. This surely can't be the way in which the peace process finally achieves something.
It depends how you spell peace. The Israelis spell it P-I-E-C-E. There's nothing to stop them building these homes. There's no disincentive, no penalties. The U.S. administration is continuing to fund their expansion in the occupied territories. And therefore, they've got no reason not to build these homes. Their plan has always been to expand their territory, to embrace as much of Palestine as possible. And they're able to get away with it, so we shouldn't be surprised that they are building these latest expansions to their settlements.
What does that mean on the ground, though? We talk about 1,200 new developments, new units, that's for families, single individuals, I'm not sure about the demographic permutations. But who are settlers and why do we have these particular settlements?
Well, the settlements in international law are illegal. That's very clear. Under the Fourth Geneva Convention, it's illegal for an occupying power to transfer its population into the occupied territory. So internationally, these are illegal. But it's a euphemism for colonization. The Israelis are seeking to colonize as much of the land that they presently control militarily, but don't control sociologically, if you like,
so
or politically.
So we need people on the ground.
Yes, but they don't want to annex the land with the Palestinians on it. They're caught in a dilemma. You know, the old phrase from the 19th century was, a land with no people for a people with no land. The problem was it was a myth because there were a lot of Palestinians on the land. So how do you turn the land into a land of no people? You've got to get rid of them. And the way they do that is by expelling them, by denying them entry when they leave the country to start abroad, or when they get married to someone from another country, they won't allow their partner to come and live in the land. So it's a revolving door, a one way out. Secondly, in those areas of occupied territories that they desire to expand their settlements, they find any excuse at all to demolish people's homes and expel them from their land for parks, for security zones, for expansion of natural expansion, they call it, of settlements. There's a variety of excuses they use, which is basically land theft. Take the land away from the indigenous people and give it to Europeans, give it to Americans, give it to Russian citizens who are Jewish, who feel it's their destiny to go and live in Israel. But they are largely parked in the settlements in order to expand and grow the state of Israel. Israel is the only country in the world that's never declared its borders. Why? Because it hasn't got enough land yet. And the settlements, they're not really settlements, you see. Settlement sounds temporary.
Yes.
But they're not. It's permanent.
Sounds benign. It's
exactly.
All very...
They are colonizing, and they steal the water, not only the land, but they steal the water from the local communities. They build these exclusive roads that join all the settlements up, which crisscross the Palestinian arable areas, their land, their fields. And so they're deprived access to their livelihoods, and that's why we're seeing more and more Palestinians forced off their land or leaving the country. We now have a situation in East Jerusalem where there are more settlers than there are Palestinians.
Which is an interesting situation. We'll come back to after this very, very important break. Because the memories of Operation Castlet, well, they're still very fresh in our minds. And most of all, we looked on with shock, outrage and horror as Israel launched an attack against Gaza that claimed over 1,200 lives, many of them women and children. Thousands were wounded, and many more live with the psychological scars of that moment. Now with fresh attacks, many are worried that this spells the beginning of a new onslaught. Ashraf Shannon, our correspondent on the ground, well, he joins us via satellite for the latest. Ashraf, these are worrying times. What's the latest?
Amina, the Israeli aggression and rampage does not seem to stop. For Palestinians in Gaza, nearly 1.7 million people here, they're feeling the worst in the coming days as Israel continues to issue threats against the besieged coastal enclave. At the same time, Israeli fighter jets, drones and tanks continue to pound Gaza almost on a daily basis. Despite the talk about a truce or whatsoever, the Israeli forces continue to attack Gaza. Even as I entered the studio, I heard that two more people were killed in two separate airstrikes. A number of people were wounded. The whole the latest escalation started when Israeli Apache helicopter killed a little child in the southern gossip town of Khan Yunis. A day later, they attacked a funeral procession in eastern Gaza, killing four people, including two brothers. Later that night, they killed two more Gazans. And as I was speaking earlier, that two more were killed today. So nearly 10 people were killed in the span of 4 or 5 days. This amid threats from Israeli leaders to wage another war on Gaza, similar to the Israeli dubbed Operation Cast Lead at the turn of 2009, which killed at least 1,200 people, including hundreds of women and children, and which also left thousands of people some of them paralyzed, some of them with disabilities because of the injuries they suffer. And we are not even talking about the psychological scars from that war. People still suffering from psychological scars. Israel continues to wage what people call a psy war, or psychological war, against the Palestinians in Gaza. You ask anyone in the streets nowadays, they tell you a war will erupt any second because of what Israel is doing to the people here.
Ashraf, the claims that we're reading in papers here, watching the television, is that these attacks are in response to Gazan aggression. Your opinion on this?
Well, these claims are ridiculous because if you read the news and from the past few months, you realize or you can understand that it's always Israeli forces who attack first, and they create a tit-for-tat situation. When someone gets killed, people want to avenge his death. Palestinians, though, they don't want to sit idle while they get killed and injured. They say they don't want to sit just like sitting ducks. So they respond, although they don't have sophisticated weaponry or explosives, all they have is homemade rockets that some of them make here locally, and hardly any Israeli get killed or injured from these attacks, which come in response to the Israeli attacks. The only thing I can recall is one Israeli soldier lost a leg a couple of weeks ago. Another one was seriously injured 5 or 6 days ago, and they were Israeli soldiers. They were not civilians. When Palestinian resistance fighters respond to the Israeli attacks, they target Israeli military bases. They don't target civilians.
All right, Ashraf.
But
we'll
Israel,
leave it there.
What Israel does, they attack civilians.
We'll leave it there, and we'll monitor the situation very closely. Incredibly worrying times here, and the Reverend Dr. Stephen Sizer is still my guest on the program. So much to try and fit in a very short period of time, but perhaps the greatest question here is, can pressure from the outside community actually be brought to bear so there is a policy change? Because this is all political, the settlements, the incursions, it all comes from a similar place. Nobody seems to say anything, so the authorities can act with impunity.
Yes, I think there's much that we can do, and we should look back and be encouraged by previous campaigns in civil society to make a change in either commercial policies or political.
Because my first guest spoke about, you know, Ireland wanting to use its presidency of the EU to put pressure on settlement goods. Would things like this work?
Well, the problem with governmental decisions like that is that the Israelis are good at playing that kind of game, and they will put pressure on the same politicians to soften the wording here, postpone a decision here, and find a common solution here. And all they're doing is buying more time to build more settlements and expel more Palestinians. I was thinking of some of the campaigns like Fair Trade Coffee, Fair Trade Tea. You wouldn't dream of buying tea or coffee now that didn't have a Fair Trade symbol. If you do, stop it. You know, we don't buy fur coats for ladies anymore because we know it's not
well,
right.
Well, it's frowned upon.
Exactly.
You know, there is a shame. There's a moral shame to this.
But it was only 10 years ago, 15 years ago, you could go into shops and buy any fur coat you like. But we change people's attitude to that. Blood diamonds. You know, people want to see the hallmark on the diamond to make sure that it hasn't been stolen from, you know, a developing country. Now, if we could change civil society's attitude toward apartheid in South Africa, it might have taken 20 or 30 years, but we achieved it without a war, through civil society, individuals making changes to their eating habits, to their buying habits, as well as to government policy. There's boycotts, divestments and sanctions. Boycotts is what you and I can do. We can stop buying settlement goods. And that's our moral choice, how we spend our money. Who should tell us how we should spend our money? The adverts try and seduce us, but it's our choice. So boycotts is a free will choice. You buy your products. And our responsibility there is to inform people so they make intelligent choices. Do you really want to buy Ahava beauty products that have been stolen from Palestinians to make money for an Israeli settlement. You know, you have a moral choice. So boycotts is up to us. Divestment is where NGOs, charities, churches, mosques, organizations have funds which they invest for pensions or for the future, and they have a choice where they place that money.
Yes.
And again, as the Church of England, we do not invest our investments in companies that make weapons that are involved in child labor. Those are moral choices. Go back 20 years ago, and we did. We had money where the money could be made. We've made policy changes. So divestment is a moral choice for corporate society, for organisations, and therefore we can campaign against Caterpillar, divestment from Caterpillar and Ahava and other products that are exploiting the settlements. The third one, boycotts, divestment, sanctions, is more governmental. And yes, we should push for sanctions against Israel, but I don't hold my breath on that one because we're playing with politicians. But we can certainly make progress on boycotts and divestment.
And people need to be aware. Where are things coming from? Where's your money going? Your investment portfolio. It all adds to the same sorry state if you don't make a stand. Right,
and there are good websites that will tell you what products are bought from the settlements. Go to Al-Aqsa, Friends of Al-Aqsa, Islamic Human Rights Commission, IHRC, various organizations will have a list of products that they advise you not to buy because they've been manufactured in settlements.
And we should heed that warning. Reverend Dr. Sizer, thank you so much.
Thank you.
And regular Remember Palestine viewers will know that every week we offer a roundup here of how pro-Palestinian activities the world over are resisting the Israeli oppression. So here's this week's Global Resistance.
Between the 12th and 16th of November, students against Israeli apartheid from the University of York in Canada organized a week mobilization to get 5,000 signatures for a petition to demand the student union support to the Palestinian-led boycott, divest and sanctions campaign.
We did our research 2 years ago and we found that York University was investing in four companies that are selling weapons to the Israeli army.
Organizers promised to continue with these types of campaigns until York University cuts the links with apartheid practices against Palestinians. In an act of solidarity with Palestine, African American students from the University of Washington in Seattle organized a panel to discuss the struggles against segregation Palestinians face every day. In the event, From Jim Crow to Israeli Apartheid, African-American Solidarity with Palestine, leaders from the African-American community explained the similarities of their struggle against discrimination and how the U.S. government keeps supporting and funding the oppression Israel keeps over Palestinians. A 21-member delegation of North Americans visited Gaza to see firsthand the realities of the occupation. They returned to the U.S. to give eyewitness accounts of the dire situations that Palestinians are living under. They returned with a purpose to educate the masses, to highlight the plight of Palestinians, and to promote a resolution to the conflict. This is the first time since 2003 that a delegation organized by interfaith peace builders managed to enter the Strip.
And after that spirited discussion, I'm afraid that's all the time we have on this edition of Remember Palestine. A very warm thank you to all of you for watching and, of course, my guest for contributing. On behalf of everyone, I've been Amina Taylor. Continue the solidarity. Until next time.